Hello and welcome to episode 194 of What Most People Think. And I'm back. I had a little bit of a holiday last week. I went out to Porto, mate. What a great place. And I've got to say, a place with beautiful architecture, beautiful people, beautiful, I sound like Donald Trump now, beautiful cuisine, great food. But, and this is where I know there's a lot of proper blokes that listen to this podcast. Let me just explain one thing. Breakfast, two croissants, one toast, two coffees and a water, right? And that was obviously for the family, not just me. All that, €7.20. Bam. There you go. I can hear you now looking at EasyJet. Get yourself out to Porto. It's a wicked place. Wicked place. But I am also recording this on the Tuesday following the Monday in shock, having seen my team, AFC Wimbledon, be 2-1 up, going into the last minute, conceded a penalty, saved it. And you think, there you go. There's your folklore moment. A penalty saved by the young reserve keeper. And then we conceded two goals in the last minute of injury time and lost 3-2. And I've got to say, you know, what's kind of embarrassing is that my son took it a lot better than me. He took it a lot better. And he actually called me out for some swearing at the end. I'd also like to make a public apology to the referee at the game. You know, listen, there was a couple of bad decisions, but I should never have said what I said about the follically challenged community. Shouldn't have said it. You know, as a man with an ever-expanding span, I think it's, you know, pathetic behaviour from me. And I will hashtag do better. But this is what most people think. This is a podcast which is weekly. And it comes from, I don't know, like slightly on the right of politics and culture maybe. But also, you know, just trying to get to the heart of what most people think about the big political and social stories of the moment. And it is Patreon funded. So you might have noticed already there was no what they call pre-roll adverts. It's ad-free, this one. And that means that you don't suddenly just hear me talking and then just someone bust in and talking about a product called Lawn Beast. You know, what the fuck is Lawn Beast? Lawn Beast, it's a new lawnmower with a funny face on, like Henry the Hoover, but for lawns. Lawn Beast or Lawn Drone, maybe that's what it would be. It would be like a drone, but for is this actually an all right idea? It just kind of hovers down. If you just say drone about anything, people just think. It's like when you say micro pig or micro brewery. Put the word micro or micro dose. Put the word micro in front of anything other than penis and people think it's good. But lawn drone, yeah, Lawn Beast. How would you, because we were talking in last week's solo episode about the fact that a lot of products try to make their products sound younger than it could possibly be. So they probably say, I beast my lawn. Yeah, guy, I'm beasting my lawn this weekend, guy. We got a guest this week. We got the comedian, Swedish comedian. And if you're thinking hurdy-gurdy, don't worry, I brought that up. We got Tobias Persson, who's a Swedish comic. And I guess that roughly speaking, you would say that whatever our side of the fence is, and by that I mean people like me, Andrew Doyle, Simon Evans, although I'm now the woolly liberal of that lot. Do you know what I mean? I'm the one that's gone soft. Constantine, he's probably on our side of the fence. So I'm talking to him about, you know, just Sweden, this interesting perception, in the same way that we spoke to Neil Delamere about those fundamental black holes in our understanding of what a country is like on the ground. You know, obviously Ireland's a lot closer at home and harder to explain why that is. But, you know, Sweden, you're already thinking things about Sweden, aren't you? Thinking about, you know, plumbers coming round, fixing things. One thing leads to another. Okay, I mentioned earlier that we are funded by our patrons. We got a board member patron. Board member. So basically, the board member thing is this, is if you're already a VIP patron or any tier, you just upgrade it to £20, right? You become a board member. You have the prestige of being a board member. Our theoretical, hypothetical PA, Karen, she'll bring you a Danish, yeah? And I don't mean a pastry, lads. No, it will be a pastry. And you get two things now for that. Is one, you get a signed copy of my last book, Where Did I Go Right? How the Left Lost Me. By the way, have you pre-ordered the new book, Basic, The British Bloke Decoded, right? Have you ordered it? Because come on, man. You listen to my podcast. There's no adverts. It's free. Just please pre-order the fucking book. You have no idea how much it make my life easier if we have good pre-orders. The publisher will be happy. Everyone's happy. I won't have to do fucking PR for like Radio South Lincolnshire. No, I was going to say no offence to South Lincolnshire, but obviously some. But board member Kevin Thorne, who's come back. I think that obviously we had, you know, the first of the month, so Patreon routinely boot people out. So Kevin has changed his payment technique. So if one of your cards has expired or something like that and you stop seeing messages from me on Patreon, do check it out if you want to still get those benefits. And oh, the second benefit for the board members is that when I'm on tour, you just, all you do is this. If you want to come and say hello in my dressing room, I'll give you one off the wrist. How much are you prostituting yourself? Some of you are thinking, just take adverts, Jeff, for fuck's sake. This is indecent. You just come and you say to one of the venue staff, you say that I am a board member, Patreon. If you tell Jeff Norcott that I'm here, I will give him the okay. You come through, we say a quick hello. You do a selfie without having to wait afterwards and feel like a plum. You know, I will do selfies after the tour, but you will have to stand there and feel like a plum. You do feel like a plum, don't you? I've seen people's eyes like they're going, oh, I really regret this now. And I don't know what the process is of asking. But if you do the board member Patreon thing, I'll give you the full service. I'll even sit on your lap. VIP Patreon, we've got John Ritchie. It's good. Good to have the VIPs. Remember, VIPs, there's a new benefit for you. Is if you let me know when your birthday's coming up, I'll give you a birthday shout out. But John Ritchie. Are you one of those guys that... I reckon John Ritchie's one of those guys that loves going out of the States twice a year. Sort of secretly thinks of himself as American. You know one of those blokes? Like wears a little Stetson when he goes. You know one of those mini Stetson? Little rule about Stetsons. Are you a cowboy? Then don't wear Stetsons. Little rule. And he wears like kind of like cowboy type boots. He just thinks he's a bit American, old John Ritchie. He watches the Super Bowl. Everyone knows that about John. It's part of his personality, you know? He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. Tampa Bay. I mean, when you say it just like that, Tampa Bay, it sounds like a place where bad stuff happens. Yeah, got tampered with it by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But it's good to have you on board, John Ritchie. Great to see you as a VIP. We've got another new patron, Stephen Calder. Stephen Calder, that's got to be a fucking Scottish name, hasn't it? This is the worst Scottish accent I've done for a fucking long time. I don't know where this accent's going. It's going a little bit lighter, doesn't it? So sometimes Scottish accent goes very light, like that. And then it goes full Glasgow. It's my favourite. Scottish people have a phrase that I've always been jealous of, which is just saying, get the fuck. Get the fuck. No other. You know, Cockneys, we have our swearing strengths. People from Northern Ireland. I've said this before. Best three swearers in the UK are Glasgow, London, Belfast. Tell me, am I wrong? What most people think, uk@gmail.com. We have our super patron, David Domain, and he comes back to us on things out of last week's episode that intrigued him or he wants to further illuminate on. And he says, on the benefits of Brexit and sovereignty. So we were talking about that last week and about the fact that, you know, people obviously, the moment we have a holiday season come around, there's queues at the ports. And actually, David on this says, interestingly, that there are a number of UK ferry ports for departing to mainland Europe. Are they experiencing delays? Could it possibly be that the French are making it harder? I wouldn't rule it out. But David says, on the Brexit, the benefits of Brexit and sovereignty, this idea that actually just making your own laws and rules in every respect is of value. William Clouston summed it up well when he said, it's the ability of the UK being able to make its own social and economic bargains. Now, by the way, before any Remainers come at me, by bargains, I'm pretty sure what he means by there is deals. I can just feel the tweets and the emails coming. I'll tell you what was a bargain, being able to go and work and live in Europe. EU fans would claim, David continues, that the UK was always able to do that while in the EU. However, even a cursory glance at the Maastricht Treaty would refute that. I mean, that was the one, wasn't it? As I was saying last week with your Maastrichts and your Lisbon treaties, Maastricht was really the one. Didn't have the social chapter in it. That was when John Major went to war with his own backbenchers, didn't he? The Maastricht Treaty, where they just fucking, they just overstepped a little bit, right? They kind of like, you know, it's the economic community. Everyone's like, yeah, free trade. That's why we joined the CTPP. But the Maastricht one, and they go, oh, and another thing, pregnant women, like, whoa, what are you telling us about how we relate to pregnant women? Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, we want to treat pregnant women well. I'm not sure you get to fucking decide. Okay. Quick thank, well, it's not going to be that quick a thank you, is the Labour Party's attack ads. Now, I don't know if you've seen these, but they've basically been producing a number of images which say, it's sort of like full US Democratic style. That so I'll give you an example. The one that's caused the most stink is basically they say quite a lot of, so since a certain year, 4,500 sex offenders haven't gone to jail. Do you think they should go to jail? Rishi Sunak doesn't. You go, okay, I'm going to guess that Rishi Sunak isn't sort of like a pedo apologist. And, you know, and it has like a picture of Rishi Sunak and his signature as well. And you think, that's interesting. It sounds a bit libel-y, but maybe they're trying to tempt the Tories to sue them. I don't know. But the fact is the data doesn't back this up, right? So this started, the stat goes back to 2010. And this is before Rishi Sunak was even an MP. I mean, maybe they've got evidence that he was a bit sympathetic to nonsense back then. I don't know. But it doesn't back it up. And they followed this up with a few others, you know, like, do you think the people who shoot people should be in trouble? Rishi Sunak doesn't. Do you think, and people have started to take the piss with it, you know. Do you think that, was it since 2010, 8,000, 8 million dogs have died? Does that upset you? Well, it doesn't upset Rishi Sunak, because he clearly doesn't care, because he hasn't stopped it. I mean, just their idea is there something bad? They're going to say that Rishi Sunak is fine with it, you know. Do you think that Hitler should have been assassinated before he became Chancellor? Rishi Sunak didn't, because he did nothing to stop the rise of the Third Reich. So why is it happening? Well, my hunch is old Keir, is a bit miffed about his personal ratings. You know, well, why is Sunak? Why am I only 2 points ahead of Sunak? I'm much better than Sunak. So I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick a fight. And then when that fight becomes controversial, I'm going to defend it in the Daily Mail, which will take it from Twitter to mass media, you know, pisses off all the right people. Yeah, including a lot of left-wingers, Keir. You know, that I hate this pisses off all the right people thing, because invariably, just why not just do something that more people agree with? Why not? Because it's fucking harder. But at least give it a go. I'm not sure it's worked, to be honest, because Twitter fact-checked Labour Party, several of these Labour Party tweets. Even everywhere I heard it on the news, they were saying, you know, they were pointing out that Rishi was not an MP there. So you're getting fact checks on the news. One thing I would not want to do as an increasingly Blairite-looking pretender to the throne is start sexing up data, because it brings back bad memories, doesn't it? Remember old TB? Remember old TB Bear? You know, with his sexed up dossier, right? You do not want to be just reminding the British public. I know it's a good decade ago now, but it is also. I mean, the thing with the Iraq War, Labour so lucky that it did not happen in the social media age, because you've used it. You just think in my lifetime, that's the single biggest geopolitical fuck up of anything that's happened. You go, but Boris lied about parties. Go, yeah, that was, you know, I was more than in favour of Boris losing his job, right? But this does not rank with what happened over Iraq. And I just think that if Labour is so weird that Labour could be so many points ahead, but be taking risks like this. It was the same with the Sue Gray thing. And I just think, I don't know, they're getting panicky. Can they see the polls starting to maybe inch in the other direction? Maybe Keir's vanity is coming in there somewhere. Because you know what happened, man? He went to Davos. He tasted that next level cognac, didn't he? Geezer wants it now, doesn't he? Fucking wants it. Yeah, I'll tell you something. I tasted that cognac and it's absolutely next level. I mean, it just doesn't even compare to the shit I have to... Did you see when I was at that party in Durham? I was drinking a fucking San Miguel. At Davos? I was skiing with fucking Bill Gates. I want more of that. Okay, so let's see. Let's see if this works for them in the polls. I would say that if you've done attack ads that create sympathy for Rishi Sunak on the left of British politics, it's not an attack, it's a mistake. Do you know as well, I've got to stop listening to these history podcasts. I got really angry. Do you know what I got angry with the other day? The Normans. I did not realise, I don't know about you, but in 1066, I knew that William the Conqueror had come over and fucking, I don't know, stuck his dick in Harold's eye or something, right? And that the Normans won. For some reason, and maybe this is my English arrogance, I just thought that they went home again. That's so ignorant, isn't it? Just saying it out loud, I realise that. Yeah, I just thought that they won and then they fucked off home. I didn't realise that they stuck around for several hundred years and basically controlled all of the English elite. Everything became, like, all the big things, law became French speaking. The English monarchs were doing their coronations in French. Fucking piss taking, you know? Suddenly I'm like, you know, all these people that want, like, kind of atonement for historical wrongs. I'm like, yeah, man, you fucked up England. We were all merry before that. We were all dancing around the maypole. Do you know what I mean? Bobbing for apples. And then you come over, building your castles. Yeah, some of them were quite attractive. No doubt they were cultural. But this is the point, isn't it? I guess it happened long enough ago that I'm allowed to acknowledge there might be one or two benefits to it. But there is almost a statute of limitations on that, isn't there? There has to be, like, I'm not furious with the Vikings either. They did what they had to do. They definitely made us better looking. What most people think. Okay, let's get into the chat now with the brilliant Tobias Paschon. Okay, making his What Most People Think debut. I'm delighted to have on the show Tobias Paschon. Or is there an even more Swedish way of saying your surname?
Of course there is. Paschon.
Is that really it? Or is that just making it more difficult for people to make us feel even more English?
Of course it is. Your mind. Yeah. But I mean, I've been introduced as Pearson, Pershun, Peterson, anything but my real name, really. So I'm sort of used to it. So I've got four different comedian careers.
Oh, you know, so I was going to be very English about it. I'll go, look, can I just call you Toby Pierce?
So, oh, that's good.
Toby Pierce.
I like that. Thank you.
As listeners to the podcast will know, I did a run of gigs out in Scandinavia, Nordic countries and stuff. And the level of comprehension over there for English-speaking comedy is insane. I mean, like, I'm going to guess that there isn't the equivalent in London of, like, a Swedish-speaking comedy night of loads of English people going, yeah, we get pretty much all of this.
No, of course not. But, I mean, we've had Monty Python, Fawlty Towers and Blackadder, and we've had all those shows for a long time, and we Inspector Morse, and everything English or even Scottish or Irish, I mean, everything, we love whatever you guys do and produce, so I think we're sort of used to hearing even, you know, quirk, you know, weird words and, you know, sayings and euphemisms. And so you pick up a lot of things.
That was what I noticed, was particularly in Stockholm and Copenhagen, was like, it wasn't just like people understood the meaning, was even topical references, little sort of catchphrases from supermarket brands and stuff like that. Yeah. It was particularly in Denmark. I can't remember specifics. One thing I do remember from Copenhagen is a very strange heckle whereby I did a gag which didn't land well, and then there was a brief pause, and the guy said, "That is where the humor is." Just out. So he thought the humor was in the fact that my gag bombed. I don't know if that's particularly Danish way to look at life.
I don't know. I think it was just there's one weird Danish guy.
That's good to know. We have pricks everywhere.
Yeah, that's where the humor is. Yeah, you leave out the punchline.
That sounds like it could be a catchphrase for a sort of Danish comic, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's where the I've been Toby Pierce, that's where the humor is. Yeah. I could do that.
Yeah, you could, please. I mean, I would be very proud if that made its way into your act. I mean, it is a thing with the English is our inability or unwillingness to learn other languages. But one thing you sort of realize when you're gigging out in these places, Finland as well, is it's not like you all woke up and thought, oh, I'm going to be incredibly global and bilingual. Like, the speaking of English is kind of a necessity, is it? I mean, is it a cultural how early did you know in life did you know how to speak English?
Well, I mean, we all get taught English at school from fourth or fifth grade, I think. But then, you know, obviously nowadays you got 15,000 channels on Netflix and, you know, people watch and listen to. So people always say, you know, Netflix is great. You got a lot of, you know, got films from all over the world, but they mainly watch American sitcoms or, you know, HBO things.
Yeah.
So people always pretend, you know, I'm into world culture. No, you're not. Have you seen any Pakistani sitcom the past 5 years? You haven't. No, you're going to watch Friends, reruns of, you know, so we consume a lot of English culture and listen to podcasts. And again, you know, names like, I mean, Louis C.K. and people like that, you know, we watch their specials. and of course your special, and you know, we watch English speaking comedians all the time because it's so many of them are incredibly good and interesting. So, and also being a small country, it makes you feel a bit proud that, you know, hey, we get this.
Yeah, I
think it's there's a little smug element. So whenever English speaking people talk about, you know, hey, you had the Vasa ship in Stockholm, right? And it sank, and we're, oh, he knows about our history, and we get sort of flattered, right?
I mean, that is the problem with the English generally is when it comes to smaller countries, is we'll generally know a couple of things, and then one of them. So if it's Denmark, there was a period where people would go Peter Schmeichel, Lerpak. Yeah. That, you know, Sweden, it was IKEA, porn, you know, we know two things. Norway, I don't know if Norway's even got two things, to be honest.
I mean, they've got oil, lots of oil, and they do go skiing, and they win a lot of medals.
Oil and skiing, and
AHA, you know, the group.
That's fair.
And again, it's hard to find references. There are both mainstream and a bit unusual as well at the same time. Mm. So that's a skill, just to look something up that's sort of local and also that everyone can understand. Because the easy way is just to say, hey, you got IKEA over here, which is fine. But if you can find something even more, you know, what's going on in politics that week or whatever, people go, oh, he knows about our... No, he's just read a few paragraphs. You're stupid.
Yeah, he just asked the sound guy, what's the big story this week in Sweden?
Yeah, so what's the equivalent of Essex? Okay, thank you. And you walk...
I think comics all over the world must do that.
I do that. When I perform in the UK, I do the same thing. I sort of... That's what you do.
Do they even say, is Essex the global language for that place? What's the equivalent? What's the nearest shit town? I mean, one of the things about like national stereotypes, obviously you do great routine, and the oldie mentioned in the show that people should check out your set of Comedy Unleashed, which was called you had a name to it. What was it? The one you did a few years ago.
How Dare You, I think it's called.
How Dare You. That is a very funny name for a show and a good catchphrase. You had loads of great comedy in it. But one of the things is you own, like cultures re-own negatives from the past. So you really own the hurdy-gurdy thing, which I thought was refreshing.
Yeah. It's one of those, it's just a stupid opening joke and it's sort of been with me for a long time. I was thinking, I'm not going to do it. Then I do it because it's just fun. And it sort of tells a lot about me and it's silly. And it's like 20 seconds long. But yeah, I think it's getting harder to do it now because, I mean, for every year, because I don't know if people remember the Muppet Show or the Swedish Chef that well.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, I hope they do.
I mean, that is a problem generally in comedy. I suppose the other Swedish stereotype, I always thought, I mean, I spoke about this with Josh Howie and David Baddiel about how offensive it is to just presume that all Jewish people are rich, but also offensive to Jewish people that are struggling financially. It must be doubly hard to take. And also, the pressure that I guess the reputation that Swedes, particularly Swedish women, have for looking fantastic...
Yeah.
Is also, I mean, one, is that accurate? And two, you know, how do Swedish people feel about that? Are they aware of it?
Yeah, we are. But I mean, here's the thing. There's so much going on in Swedish society now, and I don't want to make this like a heavy political thing, this light conversation. But I mean, we got really problems, you know, problems with gangs and, you know, people blowing themselves up and gang Kalashnikovs and a lot of crimes. So Sweden is changing a lot as well. So the old sort of Sweden from 1962, I don't know, 85, were blonde women and ABBA and Björn Borg and, you know, welfare working, everything was fine. And now we have a lot of problems. But people in the UK still have this mental image of Sweden being this utopian Nordic thing where everything works and women are lovely and fluffy. But no, we have, I would say many Swedish women are very... Now, sort of, you know, boring and sensible and very, very PC, which they are allowed to be, but it's very sort of, they're not like the swinging 60s. So I'm going to throw my bra and have
Yeah, I always think of that famous picture of the tennis player. I don't know if you remember, but she's sort of scratching her backside and it just shows one cheek of her bum. And I just presume she was Swedish. I had no backup to that, but that very much squared with the idea. Of Swedish thing. I mean, we can absolutely get into talking about the sort of social thing in Sweden. One thing I noticed about Stockholm in the one day that I was there, but I'd like to draw broad Phileas Fogg type sort of conclusions based on these.
Yeah.
Whistle Stop Tours. I was in a McDonald's, right? This is my sort of low level kind of philosophy. This is my Bill Bryson, but from the ground.
Just gonna say, you went to Sweden and you didn't even have meatballs. You went to McDonald's.
I went to McDonald's. That's what I do. I go to McDonald's all around the world to compare marginal differences. But I was in a McDonald's in Stockholm late. I was looking around at kind of people there, how messy it was, how drunk it was, how much shit there was on the floor. And I just thought, this is surprisingly like London, you know, like this in. Yeah. And also, Stockholm as a place had a sort of sense of hustle, bustle, and to some degrees, tension that London had, which I think would surprise Brits, right?
That's my point, yeah. It's not, I mean, it's still relatively, you know, safe and urban and sort of most things work in Stockholm. I mean, we've got a lot of places where things don't work. So the problem for me, I did a show 2017 at the Edinburgh Fringe, where I tried to address the problems happening in Sweden. And that was on the back of Trump's comment about, you know, last night in Sweden, look what happened in Sweden. He was referring to, I can't remember what it was. It was a non-event, but he was still talking about Sweden because he was aware of things going on. So I tried to do a show about, you know, things are not what you think. People just went, no, Sweden is lovely and just full of ABBA and IKEA. And
so what was he referring to at that time, Trump? What was he referring to?
At that specific time, I don't think he had any specific event. He probably read something in the newspaper. Because things have been happening since 2014.
So there's been like high immigration, right? And there's also been, there have been people probably surprised at the amount of terrorist activity that there's been.
That's what I mean, yeah. And more than that, we have criminal gangs and we have most shootings in Europe. And we don't have as much knife crime as you have, but not yet, but we're getting there. But we have we've got like 12-year-olds with Kalashnikovs, and that's not a joke. So we've got a lot of that going on. So these things are happening as well. So it's hard for me to sort of, I want to talk about that as well, but people still want to have the nice image. It's like
hurdy-gurdy.
I'm destroying the, it's like I'm filling.
People are like, go back to the hurdy-gurdy. Life felt simpler then.
Place she loves you again. Yeah, it's like I'm filling the meatballs with cyanide or something. they want to be happy. So it's actually hard to... So I just try to do these sort of simple Swedish reference when I do comedy in the UK, but often I don't need to. That, I mean, people just say, this guy's from Sweden, and I just have to go on. And I can use that as an excuse if I don't get a reference or if someone heckles me in a way that I don't... What? It's as a football player. I'm sorry, I don't live here. I'm really sorry. That's important, you know. So sometimes I can always use that sort of. I'm an immigrant. Sorry for.
I mean, that must be useful. But basically, especially if you can't think of a good line to come back with, just to go sorry.
Yeah.
That is where the humor is.
Can I tell you my proudest moment?
Yeah.
So far, at least, I did. What's the show? It was called. I think it's still on. Cutting Edge at the Comedy Store.
Yes.
Tuesday nights, right? Topical show.
It no longer runs, but I did it for several years. It was a great live. Yeah. It was a live topical show, basically.
Yeah, which is kind of nerve wracking. Same as doing, you know, Andrew Dawes Free Speech Nation. You know, it's live, and I'm there doing, you know, my second language, talking about topical stuff. It is a bit anyway. So that show was, I did one show with Scott Caporo and a few other comedians, and Scott. Got up and did like 5 minutes about, you know, religion and a certain religion specifically. A few jokes, you know, relax, it's just jokes. And he did it. And then a guy in the audience screamed, actually stood up and he said, shame. And Scott said, sorry, man, I'm a comedian. Get your facts straight. And then I ran up to the microphone. I said, he can't get his facts straight. He's gay. And that was, and I got a big, hey! From, you know,
yeah.
It was one of those, good, I can... Then I realized, you know, this is not about, you know, really about grammar. It's about being funny. So I realized, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm Swedish or if I'm from Turkey. I can do this. I know how comedy is. I got timing, so that's good.
I mean, that sort of moves me on to the comedy scene in Sweden. In you know, watching your clips, you kind of mentioned that Stockholm has a kind of... bourgeois, hipster, middle class that likes to think that it's working class. How similar is it to what people would think of as like the sort of Shoreditch type person.
It's
in
exactly
this
the same, and we like to think that we belong. We like to think of ourselves as, you know, part of Shoreditch or even New York, Brooklyn. We love the idea of being hip, and that people really like that. You know, you change your profile on your Instagram and you put up a flag, or you say, yeah, support this hashtag, this thing, and you get on with your middle class life. You don't really, and people are. Some of my friends are really so well off, and they have really expensive apartments, and they all vote left wing and talk about left wing things, and they live incredibly. And this is, I'm not saying this as a bad thing. I wish everyone had a lovely middle-class life, right? Who wouldn't want to have security and a television and friends and drink wine and have conversations about Nietzsche, as you do, you know? But they always sort of, they look down on, and I hate this phrase because it's so, anyway, ordinary people or, you know, they really look down on people who don't belong in their sphere of, you know, intellectual left-wing. And they would despise my father, for instance, and he's a bricklayer, and they would he probably voted for you know who, and you know they really hate people who don't live the way.
Who is you know who in Sweden, by the way? Is there a sort of populist type figure?
Yeah, of course, we've got populist. Yeah, we've got Sweden Democrats are the sort of the furthest, you know, far right thing. I mean, it's not Le Pen.
They don't sound far right, I'll be honest. The Sweden Democrats.
I know, but according to... But that's the problem. I mean, people don't... I mean, it's the same in the UK. Either you're good or you're evil. There's nothing in between. So either you vote Labour, or you are an active Nazi, and you probably were related to Goebbels in some way, right? Same in Sweden. Yeah. So even if you say... I mean, I've never voted for the Sweden Democrats, and I never will. But I mean, they have addressed a few problems, many of the problems that ordinary people... and ordinary parties and more, you know, broad mainstream parties haven't addressed. The same in the UK. It always takes someone, you know, at the fringe to say, this is not working. Mm. And people sort of almost spit out their hummus and say, well, that's very vulgar and populist. Well, we have people with Kalashnikovs. Yeah, it's always been like this. No, it hasn't.
I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? Sometimes with left-wing politics, if you say there are children on the street with Kalashnikovs, their first instinct would be to say something like, well, we need to empathize with how they got in that position. You go, no, the first priority is to stop
get
that happening.
Get the gun. Get the actual weapon. Remove them.
Wrestle the weapon off the child. I think it's interesting what you say about like looking down your nose at ordinary people. Just today, I tweeted, so the film, the Super Mario Brothers film is out, right? And it's been broadly panned by critics, like really panned. And The Guardian gave a hilarious one-star review where...
Yeah, I read that.
I mean, she basically said, you know, well, trust kids, you know, they'll probably think it's good with their superficial understanding. Basically, sort of had a pop at the child audience for child's film. I mean, children's films.
It was slagging off a child for having a child's children brain. I mean, a brain not even developed for... Yeah, of course. A child enjoys films made for them.
I mean, it was brilliant. The fact that... I mean, and the real kicker is that this film has broken all box office records for an animation ever in its first weekend, right? And this is at a time when people aren't going to the cinema and stuff. So there's something going on here. And I love those moments where, I mean, it happened a bit. I don't know if you remember the film The Last Jedi when it first came out. Yeah. Because The Last Jedi had all these progressive threads to it and, you know, it was a bit more, well, it was a bit less like Star Wars, which made the critics like it. And then within about 2 days, like the critic response to it was like 90% and the audience response was about 50%. I mean, that is... You know, you do get that now whereby, put it this way, I'm amazed, why The Guardian review kids' films, I'll never fucking know. That must be some sick joke in itself.
But you can also apply this to the whole Dylan Mulvaney thing going on, you know, with what's the Budweiser or Bud, the beer and Nike and all that. We have people sitting in, you know, in positions of power saying, we need diversity, and people who drink beer and have barbecues, they want to drink diverse. We just want a beer that's cold and tastes good.
Yeah.
So they always sort of, they also look down on their customers, saying they would love to drink a beer full of racial equality. What do you talk about? Just I want the nicest beer and not too expensive, please. Don't buy beer in Stockholm, by the way. So that's
I love the idea. I like a nice beer of racial equality. I mean, it's a thread that we talk about a lot on this podcast. Is about advertising and the degree to which, like, once upon a time, nowhere near enough diversity in adverts, right? I think we'd all agree that. But now it seems to be the only idea in town. And the last thing that they ever seem to want to do is show the people that the majority base that actually buy their products. Because I guess, in fairness to them, Tobias, if you just showed me sitting in a Wetherspoons drinking Budweiser, looking tired, one eye half closed, I guess maybe that's not selling too much beer either.
I'm not sure. I mean, at least you look like a guy who drinks. You know, you look like the actual, not spokesperson, what's the word? Target. I think it's really weird when you sort of you try to shove opinions down people's throats when just buying ice cream or beer or whatever. I mean, we can have these discussions, and and it's important. Everyone knows we should have more discussions and talk about equality because it is important. But when you're buying crisps, you don't want someone to say, "Have you thought about Mandela recently?" What? I'm just trying to dip my crisps. Yeah, no, I haven't. Can I finish my crisp? No, because you're an evil. Put the crisp down and have a think about how you live it. It's too much. It's the wrong focus. I mean, we should please have more debates, more television programs, but not let me buy a beer without feeling like I'm, you know.
Yeah, not everything has to be part, like, not every product has to be part of a march towards social justice. I always think about the two main ice creams, right? Ben and Jerry's, which, as we know, the two owners of that are two kind of LA hippie guys that want to sort of get involved in all sorts of politics. They've had plenty to say about UK politics. And Haagen-Dazs. And I always thought, do you know why Haagen-Dazs never talk about politics? It's because it's a fucking great ice cream.
Yeah, they don't have like to.
It's just demonstrably better. Yeah. The Ben & Jerry's stuff has got this weird powdery shit. And I thought, do you know what? Maybe the guys at Ben & Jerry's are just smart enough to know they haven't really quite cracked the ice cream thing yet.
Yeah.
So, they've literally got, like, one of their lollies or something. At, you know, because I often get an ice cream on the way home for a gig. And it's got like a CND, nuclear disarmament.
Really?
Badge on it. I'm like, this is a cookies and dough fucking ice cream sandwich. Yeah. You never get that shit with ice cream. I mean, in terms of the sort of sentimental, sensibilities in Stockholm. So just talk to me about how you got into comedy in the first place. How long have you been doing it?
Well, I did my first ever gig 1998, but I did like 5 minutes in between I had some friends and they had a little cabaret in a pub. And I had been writing sketches a long time and performing with a friend of mine. So we had a little double act going. Mm. We were sort of incredibly famous in that little small town for like 10 minutes. You know, in our heads, you know, when you're young, you have to have that sort of Liam Gallagher mentality. We're going to show you. So I wrote sketches and I did a lot of cabarets and, you know, radio stuff. I mean, local radio, not, you know. Mm. So then I did 5 minutes of stand-up and then I did 99, I did 5 more minutes and then very slow. But I've been doing comedy professionally, I think, since 2003 in Sweden. And then I did my first gig in England 2009 in October. So the advantage I had then, even though it was scary, but I realized, you know, I've done comedy for, you know, chunk of time. I know how to hold a microphone. I've been funny in the past. I can do this. So even though I didn't have the, you know, the language, the first couple of gigs with me, I still had the experience. So I was still being able to be gradually, you know, be funnier than, you know, a guy from England, even though he might have done, you know, like 10 gigs in total. So I realized it's not about, you don't have to be from England to do comedy. You just have to be funny. But it's still nerve wracking. It was still nerve wracking, and just do it in your second language and try to think of, you know, things. You're standing there, you know, someone heckles you and you have nothing to say, and you just have to say, wait till I get you, you know.
I mean, what would your early observations of the differences in performing? I mean, taking out the linguistic side in terms of audience conduct, reactions, that kind of thing.
Mostly audience participation, much higher in the UK, definitely, because you can talk to a lot of Swedish people in the audience, say, hey, where are you from? People, if they respond, it's very easy. I'm from Malmö. Great. So what are you doing here? I'm here to see you. Oh, fantastic. Oh, this is going great. So do you work with unemployed? Okay. Moving on. So this table full of ladies, what are you up to tonight? No, just nothing. Just had a nice meal. Great. I mean, there's nothing cooking. So in England, where you go up and you say hello, someone will immediately say, hey, fuck off. I will. I'm just going to do my comedy. Wait. And they leap at you in a different way, but they in a playful way. I find that they want you to know that they can misbehave, which is good.
I mean, that is the thing with the piss taking thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like that is a way of sort. It's hard to explain, really, but it's a way of inviting you into the culture. Yeah. You know, to say like you have a place here, but it's really hard to explain. I was trying to explain to my son recently about banter and blokes taking the piss out of each other.
Yeah.
And even as I was saying it, I thought this sounds awful. Like, why would he like this? I'm trying to say to him, like,
it's a ritual, right? It's a ritual of sort of a playful, just showing you, you know, I've got claws. I'm not going to use them, but like, come on here, give me a hug.
Yeah,
I can scratch your back really hard if I want to. I don't know what is that. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, and you can scratch me too, but like we do it. I mean, it's like giving nicknames, isn't it, to another bloke? It's sort of like you go, right, this is a new family, and so you're going to have to play fight with me. Like you would have if we were grown up together, and you know I'm gonna have to rename you, you know, Toby Pierce, right? Yeah.
Are you taking the Pierce?
that could be like, you know, one of those really lame Route One Edinburgh show titles where they just go, right, what does my surname sound like?
Exactly, yeah. And you can do like 3 or 4 shows if you have a really weird surname.
So you know, with me doing comedy, I did it from about 2001. Did it for quite a long time before I spoke about politics, both big P and small P. At what point in your stand-up career did the culture stuff or the politics stuff start coming into it?
I think it's always been there, but I mean, it was. I've been doing it more and more gradually because things have been happening and changing around me. So you have to sort of address it. Cut it out completely. And sometimes I think, why do I bother? Why do I have to sort of shove this bit into my set? Because I know it's going to be hard. It's a hard thing to sell. Yeah. I have to rewrite it and reshape it. But then I realized, but this is me. If I have these thoughts and I want to express them, it's my sort of comedy. It's organic. Every time I watch someone like, I can't think of a one-liner comedian. Okay, listen.
Gary Delaney.
Yeah, he's brilliant. When I see clips of him, I think, oh, I wish I could do that. But I mean, I can't write jokes like him, and because you have to have that kind of brain, that kind of talent. It's a bit different skill. So I just look at him and think, oh, it'd be great just to have great one-liners. Yeah, but I can't do that. I have to sort of address what comes to me naturally, and I have to work a bit harder and make it more maybe animated and physical because I move about on stage and I'm very. I use my body a lot, so I think I'm trying to find a way to present things as funny as possible and do little mini sketches and act outs instead of just saying I hate this thing. You know, I have to sort of present it in a way that makes it.
I mean, that's one thing that I sort of looking at your stuff. I think we probably share some stylistic sort of similarities in terms of you definitely like playful on stage, and you, there's no malice, but you dip into some more kind of serious subjects. Are you one of these guys that's sort of the slight left and then suddenly the left change and you're like, what the fuck happened over here?
I'm a bit like that. I think I got a similar journey, I mean, to you and Andrew Doyle and a lot of people. Politically, I'm sort of lost. I'm sort of in the middle still, I think. I don't know anymore, but I don't belong to the left I used to belong to. I mean, the very stable, working social democracy of Sweden. So it's hard, but people get nervous if you address certain issues, even in Sweden, and they sort of, they know that you, they know it's happening around them, but they people get nervous and people don't laugh as much. So it's always...
Have you had any pushbacks professionally or on the circuit in Sweden for stuff that you've done or said?
No, because I mean, I don't say anything that is beyond what people already know or think. So I don't know nothing.
Most people think, Tobias.
What most people think, yeah. Well, I've had a few emails from a woman a colleague, she wrote something weird about me being, so are you okay? You seem very angry. What's going on? You know, like that. But that's just because she's part of the hummus eating middle-class hipster community. And she's only addressing things that are very comfortable, right? And you, if you exclude all the bad bits, life is great. That works, right?
Well, that happened here, like, that happens here periodically, whereby if there's a comic that people perceive, right, that guy or that, although it is usually blokes, that guy is part of our tribe, you know, he's one of us and stuff. And then they start stepping out of line. People go, is he okay? I mean, like, yeah. I can't remember what it was that Jack D said something recently, and it was to do, I genuinely can't remember what it was, but you could probably search for it. It's something to do with censorship, and he sort of came down the side of guys like us, really.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just between the lines, you know, just people going like, yeah, what's going on? Has he gone like, for? No, there's just one issue and he thinks that. I don't understand whereby people had to sort of think that every single personality was some sort of composite that was drawn from somewhere on the cultural map and could never have a different origin.
That's exactly how it is now. And that's the most interesting thing for me. It's like you have the option is just two different suits. Left wing, the communist uniform or the Nazi one. Well, that's, you have to sort of, and I think most comedians and artists are more interesting if they are unpredictable and you see a guy who's normally left wing and he has some right wing observations. And
I mean, if you had a choice though, that the Nazi one was designed by Hugo Boss. So, it's not really, it's not, if you're just on a pure aesthetic level, it's not a tough choice, I have to say.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah, people get very nervous, and because people prefer comedians to be very. I mean, I don't think it's edgy to say ban all guns from America. That's not edgy, but some people prefer to think, oh, that he's edgy, and what's wrong with the fucking anti-abortion people? Oh, he's edgy. That's the easy part.
I guess it depends where you say it. I mean, if you were in like a sort of Texan state, real out of town thing.
Yeah.
That's edgy. You just go up there and go ban all guns in Texas. What the fuck? Who the fuck is this English guy coming in? We love guns, motherfucker.
Get off stage and say that. Yeah, but if you say it in London or in a very comfy restaurant in Stockholm, say I hate people who kill people with guns. People applaud because this is an important point. Not funny, but very important. And everyone's on board because it's sort of it's acceptable. Everyone can join that position. But if you say, there's this invisible line. You're only allowed to sort of satirize or pretend to be angry about different things, certain things. And then if you cross that line a little bit, people go, oh, where are you going? I thought you were a nice guy. And the good thing for me, because I am very, I think I come across on stage as being quite friendly and sort of, you know, without.
You're nice.
And hopefully I'm like that in real life as well. So the good thing for me, I can bring a bit of salt into my act. Mm. Without, because I've never tried to be, you know, Bill Hicks. Hello, I've never been tough. And same with you. You are actually, you know, again, friendly on stage. You're not,
but not to everybody. I mean, the thing is, in this country, I think because of the accent as well, it would sort of drift towards more working class accent. Because of how I look, I sort of look like a manual tradesman. I look like the kind of guy that goes and watches West Ham and does loads of cocaine in the toilets.
And it's all true.
So therefore. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't go to West Ham, I go to another club. But the problem is, for me sometimes, is that they just don't sort of accord the possibility of irony or that you might be well-intentioned. There was a gag that I did... Oh, fucking, you know when you quote your own gag and you can't fucking remember it? I was talking about doing gigs, how other countries such as Sweden and Denmark can understand English. I said, I don't even speak Scandinavian, right? Which is ignorant on a number of fucking levels.
Yeah.
And but you get this pause where people go, oh, is he an idiot? You know, because of how I sound.
Yeah.
No, I did it a gig recently and then I paused and went, sorry, did you just pause because that wasn't funny or because you think I'm that fucking thick that I wouldn't know that Scandinavian wasn't a language? And
And then they laughed out of relief or...
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a very sort of middle class. It was a microbrewery, a gig.
Yeah. Oh, so a lot of microaggressions. Yeah.
Okay, just button into the chat with Tobias there. Hope you're enjoying it. The new tour dates, which you think I would have to hand, they all went live as of I think Friday of last week. So we got new dates in. Just go to Live Nation, type in Jeff Norcott and look for, there's dates in. There's another date in London on sale in October. There's a new Maidenhead date because that's sold out. Bristol's sold out as well. We've got another Bristol date next year. We've got Nottingham, finally, we're at the Glee Club in Nottingham. We're going to Loughborough. We're going to Mansfield. I'm taking care of that East Midlands business. even I did that thing of going young there. Yeah, Lawn Beast. And I'm going to Chester as well. So all those dates are live now. Obviously, the book, the pre-sale is open now. So just go to any of my social media. You'll see links to that. And we're going to welcome a few more new patrons. Phil Morgan. Did I already say Phil Morgan at the top of the show? No, Kevin Thorne. Sorry, Phil Morgan and Kevin Thorne. But they do feel like, I don't know, very sort of similar names there. Phil Morgan and Kevin Thorne. Jesus Christ. Could your names just sound any more middle of the road? Phil Morgan and Kevin Thorne. We're very middle of the road and we live in the middle of the country. We live in West Bromwich. Sean Kane. That is a fucking cool name there. Is your nickname Sean Kane and Move? I've got a mate who does that. Austin, my mate. We used to go Kane and Move. Where you basically come up to somebody, give them a little insult and bowl off before they've had a chance to process it. Classic Kane and Move. Yeah, it does help that my mate Austin's got an East End accent. You got to do the fucking East End. He come up to me and say, "Gee, man, what are you fucking dressed like that for? You look like fucking John Travolta, like a fat John Travolta." Bang, he's off. The Kane and Move. Phil Richards. Oh my God, we've got another middle of the road now. Phil Richards, Phil Morgan and Kevin Thorne. Do you know what you sound like? You sound like men from West Bromwich that work as you sell bricks. That's what you do. You just want those really solid... We sell bricks. I'll get you a good deal on the bricks. I mean, one thing we talk about, you know, perceptions that different countries have of each other. One thing I think is that Britain sort of has this perception, which has been enhanced by Brexit, of being kind of xenophobic and intolerant. One thing I find here is that we, and you'll notice from having worked and lived here and immersed yourself in the culture, is we constantly think everything is better elsewhere. I don't know how you can be both xenophobic, but every day thinking, well, there's no strikes in Germany, there's no inflation in France. Yeah. So, I mean, is that a fair point? Do you find it, was it surprising to you how much we eulogise about other countries?
Yeah. I mean, I have a similar experience with, we have this thing in Sweden where we sort of constantly sort of we bring down our own cultural achievements and heritage in a sort of, you know, there's nothing special about Sweden. We don't have anything, you know. So everyone who's coming over are bound to bring things that are better. Everything's better if it comes from any other place but Sweden. Yeah. That's a general sort of easy explanation. Where we're sort of, you know, we have nothing. We got nothing special over here, and that's not healthy either. Where you sort of, you always, instead of saying this is what we like to do and you're very welcome to join this club, if you can speak Scandinavia, you're very welcome. Right? And England is always, people in England are always complaining about stuff that, I mean, when I lived in London in 2012, everyone thought the Olympic ceremony would be horrible, but it was fantastic. So, and they were almost disappointed. Oh, it was actually great. I thought it was going
to
be...
Yeah, but what did it take for it to be great in a certain group in society? Was that it just said, hey, the NHS is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they showed the Industrial Revolution, they sort of like, this was great, but also very bad. And they had some evil capitalists. The Olympics and the Olympic opening ceremony is a really interesting cultural landmark in this country because there are some people who genuinely think that that was the best thing that ever happened in Britain and that was the last time that everything was fine. Ooh. And I think it was an interesting moment because I was gigging around Britain at that time and, like, the way that London felt about the Olympics wasn't shared. I mean, people were enthusiastic about it, but you went up to, like, fucking Manchester. No one cared. It was verging on resentment. And they were like, you know, a lot of Londoners were like, you know, Mo Farah won. What a story. You know, Mo Farah, and then we won the... They were kind of lost on something. Whereas I thought that, you know, the BNP were winning council seats here in 2009. We had the murder of Lee Rigby in 2011. Oh, yeah. You know, like there was the EDL, English Defence League, were on the march. And then it came to Brexit and they were like, well, day zero for racism. You go, I don't think you've been paying attention.
Exactly. Yeah. The equivalent would be in Sweden now, where the Sweden Democrats in a coalition became elected last year. Mm. And so many people went online saying, oh God, now I'm officially, you know, politically depressed. And I think only just now we've had Kalashnikovs and guns and hand grenades and ISIS for 10 years now on an unprecedented level. Shootings, more shootings than any other country in Europe. More buildings, bombs and buildings exploding than any other country in Europe. That's saying something. And you haven't been depressed for 10 years about your own country in that state of... No, so it's only when they got into power. And now I'm really depressed. So it's...
Yeah.
If you shut out all the bad things and you only focus on the bad, you know, the people and the party you really hate, I mean, that's one way of living your life, but it's not really a truthful way, I think.
This is one of the things I think with the centre-left in this country is obviously there's very likely that there'll be a very centrist-type Labour government who are truthfully going to do probably quite a lot of the same things that the Conservatives would do.
Yeah.
And then you kind of realise that the people that support that and you know, the slightly more, even more cynical elements of Labour's campaign and their attack adverts, you go, yeah. Oh, you just kind of think that it's like label slapping. You know, sometimes supermarkets just put a different label on a different thing and get more money for it.
The Label Party, that's a good name. That's a new party, yeah. The Label Party.
Yeah. The Labour Party. So you go, oh, it's like football for you. That's what you realise. You go, oh, it's more just about you didn't want them to be doing it. It's similar in a way with Biden in the US. I mean, the isolationist policy that he's undertaken over there. I've already slagged him off earlier in the episode. I don't know why I'm going for Joe Biden this week. But the America First thing is something he's picked up and run with. But you go, oh, but this guy has a dog.
Yeah.
Do you remember that when it was part of Biden's campaign? Was like, what kind of president doesn't have a dog? Because Trump didn't have a dog.
What was that? I can't remember. The
This was a genuine part of their campaign, was that they were putting out, because Trump famously didn't have a dog, one of the first presidents at the White House to not have a dog. So, I mean, it is hilarious to even talk about.
Imagine being famous for not having a dog. That's a weird
thing. Yeah, for something he didn't have. I mean, if he'd not had a dog and had a cat, then obviously he's a prick. But then Biden, they suddenly were like putting out all these images. Here's Joe Biden with his dog. It's hard to fathom. So have you ever been in the US when there's been an election on? It is incredible. They're so fucking direct. So you'd just be watching some daytime soap opera. And then like there'll be a senator called like Chick McCauley or something. They're going, Chick McCauley hates your family. And it would just zoom in on his eyes. And you know, like, if you pause anybody at a certain point, anyone could look like a paedophile.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this dogless politician wants...
Yeah, this dogless paedophile, Chick McCauley. He did bad stuff with goats. But yeah, if you were to just go, right, what's the most root one thing with your standard population? You'd go like, this guy hates dogs. He doesn't like sport. And he drinks craft beer.
Without a sports bra. I don't know. It's always about family in the US, right? They want to take away your family or your family rights. They want to destroy. I don't know. It's just hard to believe that the level of populism going on right now. But it's a desperate move. But I think that they've done the calculation that it actually pays off. So even though Rishi Sunak and his gang, maybe they will sue the Labour Party, but the message is still out there. So I think it's the same thing when a newspaper sort of writes about a rumour. So according to rumours, Hugh Grant has done this thing, and they put it out, and he sued them. And if he sues them, he might they might have to pay him a certain amount of money, but they sold newspapers enough, copies enough.
And more people know about the allegation.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know about you, but the moment there's an allegation about a famous man, it's bad to say, but I almost always believe it. I mean, yeah, pretty much. Or if they just said Woody Harrelson like dissects live frogs, I'd go, you know what?
Really?
I fucking knew it.
I knew it.
Knew it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a bit out there, man. He just, that's not right. I just, because there is something, they call, you know, heard of this thing in Britain, tall poppy syndrome. I mean, I don't know if it's just in Britain, but he's like, the tallest poppy always gets cut down first. So the moment you have a little bit of success, you're prime. Yeah, because, I mean, you'll have an early bit of that success where everyone's going, that's a nice tall poppy. And then the poppy will be celebrated for being tall. You go, you know what else we could do with tall poppies? Cut them the fuck down.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's like you have to have, you know, keep an eye on them, and, you know, they can't enjoy themselves too much, right? It's like society has to tell them, you know, we're still in charge here. We can bring you down whenever we want.
Yeah, I mean, there is a cultural thing as well. I do think in the States, to an extent, and this is something I like about the US, is they're happy to let a guy be the guy, you know, that made it and did it. And you know when they get, in the films where they have the slow hand clap when the guy comes in the room and everyone claps. It's like, there is no British equivalent to that moment. Like, if one person tried to start clapping for a guy,
they would kill that guy, or at least fight him. What are you doing, you wanker? Why are you applauding someone having a success? Why would you wish him well? Yeah.
You should be tearing down that poppy. Are you even British?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I know. It's so weird, but I kind of like what brings us back to people heckling. I think there's an element of that. You know, if you're having if you get too much laughter, people sort of have to, ooh, careful now. We don't like it we don't want you to have too much fun on stage. So people sort of, it's like the audience sometimes, they let you know that they can bring you down, so you have to sort of treat them nicely.
I do think that, well, you've played the club circuit here over a long period. I do think now that there's less of that. When I started in the noughties, I mean, that was like a standard thing, but as you get a younger generation come through who have been sort of schooled in the world of microaggressions, I wonder whether they would even feel like it was problematic to heckle.
Yeah. To speak before raising your hand or doing jazz hands or whatever. Yeah, I know.
Or just point out like a physical, like, you know, if back in the day, someone would have just said to me, you've got a giant forehead, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But maybe modern audience would go, yeah, but why has he got a giant forehead? Is that stress related?
Yeah, and how can we help him? He's a victim.
Yeah.
How can we help him reduce the forehead?
But it actually makes me feel more at ease if someone just said, sniper's wet dream, and then I'd know what they meant.
Yeah.
Which I think is a Bob Mortimer line, in fairness. Listen, Tobias, it's been great chatting to you. I'd love to have you back on the show if you're up for it at some point, man. Because I'd love to get further into some of the issues that we picked up here. In terms of shows you've got coming up and what hype, you know, what should people, obviously there's your social media, your Twitter and stuff. Anything else I should be directing them towards?
Not at the moment. I don't think so. I'm just doing Unleashed. I'm doing that tonight and then go home tomorrow, I think. So it's I did this podcast and then I did Andrew's show yesterday. So it's just been a short trip. But I mean, I'm a bit off the comedy circuit right now in the UK because I haven't been emailing clubs for a long time. I try to go to the King's Head and, you know, a few nice clubs, but I'm sort of off the map now because, I mean, there's a lot of new comedians, and since Brexit, it's sort of harder to.
That's why we did it, you know.
Would you like me? Toby Pierce, who are you?
that's the key to getting in the new Brexit brain. Call yourself Toby Pierce. And you'll be fine. But listen, Tobias Toby Pear-shaped?
Toby Pear-shaped. You and your forehead.
You could do like a really crap prop character. Toby Pear-shaped.
Yeah, that's actually what I do. That's where the humor is. Yeah.
That's Toby Pear-shaped. That's where the humor is. 1st to the 28th of August at the Edinburgh Fringe. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully see you
likewise.
Soon.
Likewise. See you. Bye.
Okay, that was the chat with Tobias Pearson. He's a brilliant comic, so do look out for his stuff. Loads of great stuff online, and follow him on Twitter. We're just going to do the review, so if you leave me a review on iTunes or anywhere I can find them, 5 stars and I'll read them out. This one is from Obi. This is like Obi-Wan. with all the content available. This one, this is the one. Oh, shut up. You didn't do this deliberately, did you? It sound like Obi-Wan. With all the content available, this is the one show that's worth making time for. This is the podcast you're looking for. A good take on the pulse of politics in the UK without being lectured. Keep going, mate, and looking forward to the live shows. Thanks, man. When everyone says keep going, it always immediately makes me feel exhausted. Jeff Norcott is a refreshing voice in today's divisive, disconcerting... Oh, sorry, this is from someone. This isn't just my own ego talking. It's from Carl. I always think somebody called Carl is a fucking Geordie. Jeff Norcott is a refreshing voice in today's disconcerting and damaged political arena. Finding common ground and having funny discussions with people from all political standpoints is very welcome. Very welcome, very welcome. I'm going to be at the end. All right, there was just a one new review there. So, yeah, buy the book, buy the new tour tickets, leave reviews, recommend my podcast. Please. It's just desperate, isn't it, at the end. This is what comedians have been reduced to in 2023. We used to just do a couple of gigs a week. Do you know what I mean? And if you were doing all right, you might do a couple of bits of telly or something. You know, you do a residency at the end of the pier. You know, those are the days. But now, every fucking day, read my shit, watch my shit, share my shit. But look, I am grateful to anybody who listens to this podcast. It's such a fun thing to do. Oh, my God. It's gone shit at the end, isn't it? Such a fun podcast. It's such a fun thing to do, guys. Just put me out of my misery. Please, just somebody...